And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bub on the Bat Flip, episode 145. We're going to start our starting pitching position previews for the 2023 fantasy baseball season with our part one going 1 through 15 ADP, and then some late targets similar to the outfield previews we've done before. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host is always on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, my friend?
We're doing pretty well, Bubba. You know, I'm becoming a baker. Nice. In my spare time. Yeah, I got a used bread maker. Ooh. And I've been making some bread. So
nice. What kinds of breads?
Well, I've got this honey, I don't know what it's called, but it's a bread that involves a lot of honey.
Okay.
And it's got honey. We've got a little gluten-free flour.
Nice.
It's excellent.
Sounds good.
And then I put a lot of butter on it.
Excellent.
And that is sounds how a perfect. Baker does his work.
Sounds perfect. I'm a fan. So maybe you can bring some to the barf draft in a month or so, whenever the heck it actually
for
happens.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know. I was thinking about that.
I messaged him Sunday night. He has a rough idea of when he wants to do it. So
oh, he does? When is it?
I'm not going to say it on the air because I don't know if it'll actually happen. I can tell you off the air. But okay, cool. He said he has a rough date. He was supposed to email us last night or tonight, so we should be getting something shortly. But
okay, cool.
Yeah, but yeah. That will be coming up soon enough. But yeah, Nick Pollock is in the chat saying it's live. Yes, we are here, Nick. Little difficulties on the home front, but we are here. So we're going to get in some starting pitching previews. Nothing like Pitcher List can do. And congrats to PitchCon, over $10,000 raised for ALS. Yeah. Pretty darn impressive. If you guys missed out on that, it'll be available on their YouTube feed, usually a couple weeks after it's all said and done. So highly recommend checking it out. I know Toby was on a panel. I was on a panel. Like, there's a lot of better panels than me. There's a lot of great stuff out there. So I highly recommend checking it out. Some phenomenal, phenomenal stuff, as always, from the people at PitcherList.com. Ooh, it's available tomorrow, Tuesday. Tuesday, January 31st. It's coming out on YouTube. That's like the quickest it's ever happened. So Nick just dropped that in the chat. It's coming.
I would like to be on a panel about bakers who also play fantasy baseball. I'd be rate very interested.
Rate your s'mores. that should be it. But Nick is very excited because we are talking starting pitching, Toby. So this can be a ton of fun here. I know you're kind of getting into your groove and going through like your research. You're getting your projections taken care of, your models. All that stuff. You're getting ready to eat it. You haven't started drafting yet, have you?
I haven't started drafting yet.
You said you were close last week, so you said it could be happening soon. Yeah. So I'm really curious to see how you view these early pitchers, because I've done for Gaining the Edge, we're dropping our top 40 consensus picks sometimes the next few days when our Kirlin feels better. But it's an interesting grouping. Like, there's a lot of ways between projections, between models, between personal preferences, how you can kind of rank outside of like the top three or four. There's a lot of moving parts, which is really an interesting dynamic for the position this year. So that's kind of part of the question we start out with at every position. How are you attacking starting pitching in 2023? We know you're, you know, people know you as the pocket aces guy. We also know that you can conform to kind of what goes. Like, you still want early pitching, but it doesn't have to be rounds one and two per se. So like, from your early research and whatnot, how are you going? Because you haven't drafted yet, but I'm sure you've heard through podcasts or chatter, there are not a lot of pitchers going early in drafts. I took ADP from the 8th to the 29th, which is 12 drafts. Shohei Ohtani's technically in the first round. Corbin Burns is picked 15.08, so he's a first rounder. But for the most part, there aren't any pitchers in the first round ADP-wise. And even through the first two rounds, there's six total pitchers, and only four of them are starting pitchers. I tweeted it out last night. Seven of the top 20 pitchers are closers in the top 50 picks.
We'll get into closers.
It stands out in a big way to me, because it to me, people think like, yeah, it shows the closers go so early, but what it meant to me was that just shows you how deep starting pitchers are going in drafts, because that's a lot of pitchers still going past pick 50. That's what it stood out to me. So enough of my rambling. How are you approaching the position this year? Because it feels a lot different than years past, basically.
Yeah, I think it may be different than years past. We'll see. I mean, I still think that, I don't know. I think for me, I feel like there are a lot more ways to attack the position this year than maybe I felt previously. I do feel like there's a deeper set of pitchers that I feel pretty comfortable with. But I also think that I think the landscape is going to change pretty dramatically as we get into spring training and we get a little bit more of an idea of where guys kind of are. I feel like there's some guys who are falling back where all it takes is one injury, you know, and all of a sudden there's a little bit of a run or there's a little bit of a push up. You know, there's a number of guys who I feel like people are just kind of waiting to make sure that they're healthy. You know, I think, Spencer Strider's already going pretty early, but I feel like some people are waiting to see, you know, to make sure that he's recovered from the ailments that he had towards the end of last year. Zach Wheeler, you know, if he comes in and he's throwing hard, you know, I think he, he moves up. But and then Shane McClanahan, like another example. So there's a number of different guys, you know, I think that could really shift the level of comfort that people have as they get into the deeper drafts. I think we already see pitchers pushing up. And one of the things I think that happens a lot is that people, Nick said,
I'll shut up and chat.
Oh yeah. He says,
I can't stay up all night, but hot dang, y'all better get to Castillo and Rodon and attack pitchers 15 and 25. And I don't disagree at all.
Well, Nick always takes pitching late. So
yeah, he waits. I mean, it actually works this year if you start like breaking down. Like that, basically for me, I'll let you continue in a second here. But with Nick's point is, like after you get through like the elite, there's not a lot to me separate. Like there is separating points between the chunks of pitchers, but it's not as drastic as years past. Like where we have like you know the elite five, there's like a group of 10. It's like there's this elite group and there's like this really really good group, but it's a big group, and there's still a really good group. And it's just like that really good group. You could see guys taking that jump to the really, really good group, if you know what I mean. So it's not like years past where you had to nail an elite guy. There's a lot of moving parts where you wouldn't be shocked. We always try to find like, you know, the Robbie Ray, which guy's going late that finishes top 50. There's a ton of dudes going between ADP 100, 150 or 150 to 200. You wouldn't be shocked if they're a top 75, top 50 guy next year. And that's what's interesting with pitching. But back to what you were saying about your plan of attack.
No, I mean, I think that, I think there is maybe less separating guys. And so it's much more about who you in particular, you know, prefer, you know, and what your level of comfort with different guys is. I mean, one of the things that, is interesting, if you look at last year, there were 10 pitchers that had 200 or more strikeouts. The latest guy of all those pitchers going in drafts was Charlie Morton, who I think last year was around pick like 60, 65 in ADP. So nobody drafted after an ADP of 65 last year had 200 strikeouts. And you could be like, oh, well, that's just kind of an arbitrary number. And it's definitely an arbitrary number, but, take it for what it's worth. But, you know, the next guys are Shane Bieber, you know, Yu Darvish, Shane McClanahan, Framber Valdez. These are all guys that were going pretty early, you know, in drafts, like relatively speaking. And how many of the guys that went, you know, before them, you know, also later in drafts also struggled. So I guess I'm rambling a little bit. And all I want to say is I'm just going to go pocket aces this year to start off with. And just build from there, because that's the only way to build a team.
I guess the other way to kind of go off of what Toby was saying is, yes, there's a ton of really good pitching, but at the same time, we say there's a lot of great pitching, but there's only X amount that got 200 innings, only X amount that got 200 strikeouts. Like, and the difference for people that get you the 200 innings, the 200 strikeouts, yada yada, that's elite. Like that is game changing stuff. Where these other guys can be really, really good and they get you 160 really good innings, which helps a ton. I'm not going to downplay that. But when you get these guys that give you 200 amazing innings like that, or even 200 is good innings, the fact that it's 200 good innings, it helps offset other things down the road in your roster. So there's a point that, yes, the pitching is super deep, and yes, I will probably fall into the conversation of your Castillos, your Rodons. I'm even starting to like Bieber this year for things you mentioned. He returned to his ace level with innings pitched and a lot of things last year. but there's also the guys that just are beasts, just absolute beasts. Like, and I think we can all agree, and everyone said it, that no one's going to be surprised when Burns and Cole are first-round picks when things get real serious and maybe another pitcher enters the top. Like, who knows? So it'll be fun. We'll discuss this now. We always recap things closer to the start of the season, and it'll be fun to see how the ADP changes, especially at starting pitching. And that's what is fun about this.
The one thing I'll say, Bubba, it's gross. I do not like the pitchers in the middle rounds, and I do not like the pitchers towards the back end of the drafts. I feel like every year there's a lot of guys back there where I'm like, people are too smart now. I mean, like, think about Kevin Gausman, you know, like, everybody's like, he didn't really pitch as well as we wanted, but he's back where he was last year. He's probably going to go before he went last year because people are smart enough to see the BABIP and to see, you know, the possible regression. So it's just like the market is so good at identifying these guys, and then they just get so much helium as we get closer to drafts. And so, anyways, we can move forward, but.
Well, it's a great point though, because like Bloomfield and I myself, we'd started doing these pocket of ADPs 1 through 150, and we did 150 to 200 last week, and he separates it hitting and pitching. And from 100 to 150, there's still some pitchers. There's a few, but it's definitely much different than the top one. And it makes sense based on ADP, but it goes to what you're saying. That 150 to 200, really big drop. Like, there's like two pitchers maybe. We're like, okay, we could live with that. We're both really curious to see how 2 to 250 looks this Thursday night, because it's just like there's still other positions. There's outfield, there's some hitters and everything. It kind of plays into Toby's strategy where the starting pitching, it looks fun. It looks like there's depth. Looks like you can wait. But if you wait, you better get like 3 or 4 in the top 10 picks, because you waited and that's great, but it gets nasty. So good luck, as Toby said. We will cover that and more. So like I said, we have one pitcher for sure. In the first round, and it's kind of a caveat. He's also a utility player, so it depends on how you want to draft him. I put him here because I've already done a show where we left Shohei Ohtani off the top pitchers, and I got a lot of messages saying that. And I'm like, well, you know, I view him more as a hitter than a pitcher, even though he's a Cy Young caliber pitcher. That's just me. So he's got an ADP at 10, Toby. He's the number one starting pitcher technically off the board. How would you approach Shohei Ohtani on drafts? Because he's the guy that I never deny his talent. I think he is the unicorn. He is an MVP and a Cy Young candidate almost every season. But it's just something about him that scares me, plus the fact of, when do I know the right time to use him outside of a two-star week? It's very tough at times. So how do you view Shohei this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you draft him, you're planning to have him as a hitter. He's more valuable as a hitter. It's going to become a meme pretty soon. My spreadsheet, everybody's making fun of me the moment I hang up, everybody's like, oh, my spreadsheet. People are even asking questions these days, Bubba, about the spreadsheet, which really isn't my spreadsheet, but, it's mine. He's like a $24 pitcher. And he is a drum roll, please. He is about $29 hitter, on the spreadsheet. And so that just gives you a sense of like, overall, you're going to get more value probably, from him as a hitter. You know, I think the one thing that's kind of going to be key about Shohei is just figuring out how the Angels use him. Are they going to use him in a similar manner to how they used him last year, where I think he only had one two-step last year. And so there are certain weeks, like last year I had Shohei, and I had Shohei on the team that won. And one of the things that was nice is down the stretch when I needed pitching, you know, during weeks where he had 5 games, you know, I would throw him in as a starter. You know, in the one week where he had 2 starts, I would throw him in as a starter, or when he had just like an absolutely elite matchup, and depending on what my other, you know, position. So he adds some flexibility for a lineup that goes beyond just like kind of the util only piece, where you can, you know, if you have a really good week of hitting and maybe he's got tough matchups and he's a $15 player that week, and you feel better about the difference between that guy, you know, and the next hitter, and you just can stick him in there in your pitching, I think that provides you with a little bit of flexibility. So I do like Shohei overall. I think you're drafting him as a hitter mostly, but I do think that there's an opportunity to kind of do your best. And sometimes it doesn't work out, but all we're trying to do is put our best, you know, probability out there, you know, give us the highest chance based on all of the numbers we look at to get the highest return. And sometimes that'll work, sometimes it won't. But I do think, I do like Shohei a lot, you know.
He's very, very good. And that's just, it's so hard for me to wrap my head around it. I think I just need to accept the fact that he's elite and I need to do it. And like Chicago Jay says, he's a points league goat. Yeah, 100%. I've talked, like I've done cut line podcasts with Curtis Jones and he's the easy 1-1. Like you just take Shohei, best ball formats. They pick when he has the best week and where to put him. Perfect. Like he's elite. He's basically two players in one. He is a unicorn in those formats. So that's an easy 1.1 for me in those formats. In these, it's a little trickier, but like you said, is I'm probably drafting him as a hitter more so than a pitcher, but I should probably wrap my head around the fact that he is a really, really good Cy Young pitcher. And there's a good chance the Angels said they would start to start earning him from time to time this season, which would, like you said, change things quite a bit in that realm as well. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah. But yeah, I do respect and like Shohei quite a bit.
Yeah, but, and one thing I'd say on Shohei is who led the league last year in K-minus walk rate for starting pitchers?
Was it Shohei, I'm assuming?
It was Shohei, yeah. So, I mean, I think he's it's not like there's really any question mark, at least from my perspective, like that he is an absolutely elite pitcher. The one thing I'll say, like the strand rate is really high at 83.1%. That probably comes down, but all the other numbers are really, really nice. I mean, you could ask for a higher O swing, but, you know, maybe you will get it, maybe you won't. And there was a dramatic change in his pitch mix as well. I think that highlights that, throwing the slider about 40% of the time as compared to 22% of the time the year before. So feels like he figured something out last year from a pitching perspective. And he, regardless of who he was pitching against, he was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, no, that's, I 100% agree with you on that. Let's go to Corbin Burns. He's just out, basically he's pick 15. Let's just say he's pick 15. So he's at the end of the first round of a 15 team draft. Dude's awesome. You know, 200 innings last year. He had that amazing 2021 and just took it to a new level innings wise. Still 2.94 ERA, third straight year, sub 3 ERA, which was outstanding. When you look at the whip department, a sub 1 whip for the second straight year, been 1.02 for three straight years. Another 24 plus percentage K to walk. He was very, very good. The strikeouts were down a bit compared to the previous two seasons, but he pitched so many more innings, worked out just fine. So he was elite. He was great. What do you have on Corbin Burns?
Yeah, I mean, he was great. Again, you know, I think he had some struggles in the second half last year a little bit, but it was really just, you know, regression coming back. You know, you can't continue to put up 0.38 home runs per nine. You know, the 1.02 seems a lot more reasonable and in line with his 0.93. But the K minus walk rate was really strong. The swinging strike rate was really strong. The O swing stayed really strong. You know, the Z contact suffered a little bit, 83.4%, not what you'd love to see necessarily, but all the numbers are really, really good. You know, I think the difference between him and Cole, who would be my SP1, is that, is the team context, I think, you know, number one, like, I don't think the Brewers are going to be a very good hitting team. And I think, you know, that he's going to struggle with that a little bit. I mean, that's like really the major separating factor for me between the two of those guys, but I think Burns is great.
Yeah, he's great. I have no problem with it at all. I think if you want to go there, sure. For me, I like a couple guys a little later, just if I want to get a pitcher early, but zero problems with Corbin Burns. And honestly, I'm with you. I have Garrett Cole ahead of Corbin Burns, and it's Garrett Cole's the third one. We'll just go straight to him. ADP is 16.2, just behind Burns. But for me, the separating part between the two is 200 innings last year. That's four 200 plus innings in his last five seasons, five in his last, what is it, seven, basically, or six, I guess. That's just five of his last seven, which is just insane to have that kind of consistency. 181 in one of the years. He doesn't 116 because he was a little banged up, but the dude's just been a beast on the mound. Innings. Ratios have been great. 3.5 last year with the home run ball going up. We've discussed that many times, and so has many other people. I think that's something to not worry about. And the fact is he doesn't walk a lot of guys, makes those a little less damaging. Still a 1.02 whip, elite ratios. It's going to get you a handful of wins on a great ball club and a ton of strikeouts. And like I said, is the biggest differentiating factor, and it could be grasping at straws, is we've seen Cole pitch these innings so many times, and it's just that volume is tremendous. So I love Gerrit Cole. I know you love Gerrit Cole. Ryan Bloomfield asked, does Gerrit Cole still suck? I think we know the answer to that, but what's your thoughts on your number one, Gerrit Cole?
That could have been such a great meme for me, and it just, it was painful. I stopped posting it after a little while because, like, with Vlad Jr. and being so wrong on him, like, I mean, Gerrit Cole still had a fine season, but being like wrong on Vlad, but not having him on any of my teams so that it like destroys my soul was very different than having that meme and then having Gerrit Cole like destroy my soul every single time he went off. Yeah, I mean, Gerrit Cole would be my SP1. Like you mentioned, the consistency has just been outstanding throughout his career. I mean, at least through his recent career, the last 5 years, you know, the whip is always low. The strikeouts are absolutely fantastic. You know, the volume has been there. He's got 200 innings pitched in 4 of the last 5 full seasons. K minus walk rate is brilliant. Swinging strike rate is really good. Z contact is really good. O swing's really good. You mentioned the home run issues, the 1.48 home runs per 9 in a season where, you know, the home run per fly ball went down. Generally his went up. And I think, you know, that third ball, the Aaron Judge asterisk ball, is what it is. So I like Cole a lot. You know, I think, whereas with other players, I think there are maybe things that you could point out. Like with Burns, you're like, oh, well, he might not be successful because the velo dipped at the end of the year and his skills kind of went down over his last 10 games. Maybe that continues and he's not elite anymore. It's like the only thing that points towards Cole not being elite is the batted ball quality against him. And that's just there's too much variance in that kind of year to year, where there's nothing really in his pitching that you see him like, what are you going to complain about the strikeouts? Oh, we had the most in the year, you know, like the ERA and the batted ball quality, I think, and the home runs are the major reason why you might see him not being successful. And last year seemed like about as bad as it could get.
Yeah, and I agree. I think we saw the worst, and the worst was not even that bad. So it's like, if that's the worst, I think we're sitting pretty on that one. Fourth starting pitcher off the board, and this has moved in draft season because early on, and this is an ADP of 27, Jacob DeGrom was going a little farther back in the realm of starting pitchers. He was about it felt like around 25 to 30. So the ADP hasn't changed a lot, just what other pitchers around him has changed. But he's the fourth starting pitcher off the board in Texas, new team, Texas Rangers. We saw 64 innings last year, 92 the year before. It's been a while since we saw the workhorse that is Jacob DeGrom. We know, I think most of us can agree, or at least they say pretty darn close, per inning basis, probably the best pitcher in baseball when he's out there. That's the thing, when he's out there. Like I just kind of said, he hasn't done it in 3 seasons. One of them was a short in 2020, still only threw 68 pitches, like innings, so he didn't go deep then either. You'd imagine he's healthy just for the fact that the Rangers gave him the deal they did, but maybe they gave him the deal they did so they could slow play him this year and have him ready for next year. I don't know. It's one of those, if you believe in the health, he's amazing at this draft pick. I have trouble believing in the health, and I might just miss on this one, Toby, but what's your thoughts on Jacob DeGrom?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if there's much to say here other than just pointing out that Jacob DeGrom has a 20% plus,
as 20% plus pitcher. What? Sorry,
swinging strike rate.
Oh, that's
for 3 yeah. consecutive years as a starting pitcher, which is just ridiculous. You know, I think the only thing to say is the volume. Like you mentioned, he's at 155 innings in my projections. That puts him as the 11th best player, SP number 3 or SP number 2. Excuse me, I'm looking by ADP. So it makes him the second best starting pitcher. And so that just gives you a sense of how good he is on a per innings basis. And so the major question becomes, okay, how many innings does he need to throw at his projection in order to kind of meet that? And that would actually be a pretty fun exercise. Maybe I'll do that and figure out like where at his current aggregated projection, what inning pitch threshold does DeGrom not return value, and then using that as kind of the barometer for whether you think he's going to make it or not. I think he's really intriguing. I think he's very intriguing, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in spring training. I mean, he could easily be SP1 if he looks really good in spring.
Yeah. And there's no arguing it except like you better hope he's healthy. That's all it is. But, and it's one of those, like I said, with Verlander last year, like when you look at DeGrom, he's an older pitcher than people think. So I think it's one of those, I know they gave him like a 4-year deal or something. So obviously they want him for a while, but some of these older guys that have done it before, and he was a 200 inning guy for a while there. Sometimes they just let them go. Like, hey, they're healthy, or at least, you know, he ups it to like 150 to 160. And if he can do that, as silly as it sounds, that could be an amazing 160 at ADP 27. So yeah, it's a tricky one. It's one of those, like, you know, you can use the lazy like joke that I'll make is, if you want to win an overall, this could be your dude. Like, he really could be, but like, that's not always the smartest approach to things at times, but it does work for some if you watch it. So keep an eye on Mr. DeGrom. The fifth starting pitcher off the board is one Sandy Alcantara. And this is a fun one. I hope, you know, Nick's in bed, I think, already all snuggled up with his, you know, his pitch mix changes and everything, and his new pitcherlist.com stuff he's releasing. But this is one of his guys, the Sandy Man Can. Back-to-back years of 200-plus innings. Got the Cy Young this past year. 228 innings. That's like stuff that, Toby, we saw when we grew up as kids. I don't think most people that just learned what, you know, the podcast app is on their iPhone knows what 228 innings looks like. But it's crazy. Ratio of 2.28 ERA. He was elite. He's had low ratios. He's an accumulator. And I try to say that without being rude, but he is an accumulator. If he doesn't get the innings, the numbers obviously will not look nearly the same. He needs the innings to get the strikeouts. But he'll get you a ton of wins. Quality start leagues, he's elite. But innings, ratios, he's great. I don't know. I like the upside of other guys I know that have the strikeout stuff in them. So it's tough for me to draft Alcantara right now. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like if you look across the board for Alcantara last year, you know, slight increase in the O swing, lost ground in the in zone contact rate, lost ground in some of the control metrics like first pitch strike and zone percentage, which I don't focus on that much, but this is just kind of like how I'm trying to view it. His swinging strike rate was 12.1% in 2022. It was 13.3% the previous year. So he lost ground there as well. He lost ground in his K minus walk rate as well. But where he gained was, you know, a drop in the home run per nine to 0.63, which, you know, given how he throws in the new ball, that's certainly a potential thing that could stick or stick close to that, as opposed to the 0.87 that he has for his career. You know, the strand rate goes up to 78.8%. That doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I can't really find an explanation beyond a little bit of luck. And then the BABIP was also the lowest it had been since, you know, really the lowest it's been in a full season for him. And the reason why I share that is just, if you were to look just at a purely skill basis, he was worse last year than he was in 2021. Yep. And in 2021, he threw 205 innings. He had a 3.19 ERA. A 1.07 whip and 201 strikeouts. So that's not a bad season. Like, that is a perfectly good season. I just think that last year went so well in so many different ways that the reason he hit that 228 number is because he had so many clean innings or innings where guys don't score, you know, and those things just don't over the longer term tend to continue in one direction the whole time. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of pullback. I think he's going to beat a lot of his ERA estimators because he always does. But I think when all is said and done, you're looking at a low threes guy, you know, with a low, you know, 1.07, 1.1 whip, and about 200 strikeouts, maybe slightly less in a little over 200 innings. And that's a really good pitcher, but it's a different pitcher than he was last year. And I think you're buying him being the guy that he was last year. So
well said. Well, you said it much better than I, because I did a couple recent little like article digs on some of the early draft picks from last year. And Alcantara wasn't really like a fifth round pick or whatever, but like looking back on his season, you nailed what stood out to me so much is, well, A, I hate buying or paying for a career season, which is what you're doing with Alcantara. And it's not a slight, like you said, it's not a slight on him. He's a great pitcher. He really is. But it's like, you know, fantasy drafting is a price game. And that's what you got to play is that kind of deal. But you said his numbers were great. And that's why when I said it differently, like the accumulator thing, he was worse kind of last year. If you look at the stats that he was the year before, he just had more innings. So it kind of, to me, it kind of like leveled things out a little more and made it even better. So again, nothing against the man. If he can go 220 innings again, he'll probably have a phenomenal season for you. Like there's no question that, but you know, 200 is one thing, 220, that's insane. Like that's a lot of innings compared to 200. And so it's no slight on Sandy. I know people are going to come out and say things because there's certain people that are all about Team Sandy and I get it, but it's just from a draft picks, a price, draft price standpoint from, if you like Toby said, if you look at what he did on a like per inning basis or whatever, it was much different than the years before. And that should stand out to you that if something steps back a bit innings wise, then yeah, it's gonna be a little different than you're hoping for there. Who knows? And it's Miami. Like you're betting on a guy on a bad baseball team. Like they're gonna, Miami's pesky. They'll be maybe 500, but in the end, they're not a good baseball team. So it's gonna be tricky as well when you're doing all that. All right, the sixth starting pitcher off the board, ADP around 32, just behind Sandy. Sandy 31.5. So Sandy's been dropping. DeGrom's been going up. Spencer Strider's just kind of hanging out. He's been around 30 this entire time, which is interesting because it felt like at first pitch when you know we all started digging into ADP and it's been kind of going since. The buzz on Spencer Strider hasn't stopped. It's been going wild, but I think people are just kind of holding back. So I wonder, like we mentioned, Cole and Burns, those guys will kind of go in around one. Does Strider get a big bump maybe in the part of round two, or does he stay? That's what I'm really curious to see is does like a more consistent veteran get the bump, or does the guy – like Strider get the bump. But what we saw with Strider, 131 innings was great. Started in the bullpen, went to the mound as a starter. Elite strikeout stuff. Phenomenal, like Jacob DeGrom-esque is one thing, the way I'll say it. Like a lot of leaderboards, they were right next to each other and stuff and everything. So the guy's great. Had that little injury towards the end of the season, into the postseason, a little concerning. But like Derek Rhodes said, there hasn't been anything that's shown a pitcher kind of have issues with this once they're healed, which is good to see. I just can't do it when I'm looking for innings eaters early on. I may regret it tremendously, but I don't see them going more than five or six innings with Strider. So it's just tricky for me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, Strider he was really good last year. I said that Shohei led and came on his walk. That's because Strider didn't qualify. But 29.7%, 38.3% K rate. I mean, the swinging strike rate at 15.5%. You know, maybe that K rate is a little elevated for where it should be. But, you know, the ERA, the whip, the walks were an issue, but he was able to keep those right around league average, slightly worse, but just with the strikeout stuff. The home runs per nine was a little low. He had 7 home runs that he gave up on 17 barrels. The barrel rate was low, though. So I think that that's important to note as well. And so, you know, maybe he gives back a little bit there, but even at his projection where it's coming in right now, you know, he's still a 5 pick quote unquote value, you know, to rank of 28 versus ADP of 33. And I think that's at similar innings to Jacob DeGrom, you know, 155, 162, 154, 154. So again, I think he's a really good player. He's a guy that I need to see in spring training first, you know, to really be able to feel good about going in that direction. I mean, in a DC, you know, whatever, like if you're doing $150 DC or whatever, I think that's, you know, perfectly reasonable pick to make. But before I really attach myself to Strider, I think I want to see what spring training looks like. But, you know, he's really, really phenomenal.
Yeah, and that's the tough part. I said, and you said it too, is there were so many leaderboards that showed up last year. There's Bloom boards that started up right away. Strider's right there with DeGrom on so many things. And that's kind of gives you that kind of oomph. Like if he could go to 170 innings, holy crikeys. Like what he could put together out there, that's just elite. So I should probably have more of an open mind like you're talking about, like maybe wait and see. it is definitely one of those like boomer busty type guys. I think he's going to be healthy, but we'll have to see. A lot of, you know, thinking gets me in trouble a lot. So we'll have to kind of wait and see how that one plays out. The seventh starting pitcher on the board is a guy I love because he's boring as heck. But you want to talk consistency, Brandon Woodruff is that dude for me when it comes to ADP and production, close to 35 ADP, just behind Josh Hader. Brandon Woodruff, what I love about him, you know, 153 innings last year. That was because he missed a couple starts where he couldn't even feel his fingers, which was scary. And his couple starts before that is why his numbers looked the way they are. Because after that injury, Brandon Woodruff was filthy. Like, it was the Woodruff of old. I know people that have heard me on this show enough probably get sick when I say it, that if it wasn't for Corbin Burns, people would say Brandon Woodruff is a Cy Young contender every year in Milwaukee. But he's amazing, and I'm actually surprised he's going this high ADP-wise. Since he came back on June 28th from that injury, he made 18 starts, went 8-1, 109 innings in those 18 starts. Not too bad. 137 Ks, 2.38 ERA. Sounds pretty good. A 25% K to walk, which is outstanding. A less than one home run per nine. Woodruff is as like when he pitches. Now the innings is fluctuates with him, but when healthy, you're going to get 170 to 180, I'd assume, with Woodruff, and they're just quality, boring quality innings. He's like a strikeout per nine. Last year was even better than a strikeout per nine. Brings you great ratios. I love pitchers like that, especially if you want to take a chance on a Strider or you want to take a chance on certain guys. A guy like Woodruff just cements things for me. I could be overexcited about him, but I love the consistency he brings to the mound. So I'm a big Woodruff fan.
Yeah, I agree. I like Woodruff a lot. The projections do not like Woodruff compared to a...
You're back.
Oh, I'm back. Yeah. Sorry.
Now you went out again. You went out. Again. Now you're back.
All right.
You're going in and out. In and out.
Keeping you guys good. On the edge of your seat. Hear what I'm going to say, or are you not? I think that the projections don't like him very much, but I think the projections are a little bit high on the ratios, which I think is bringing him down. I think, like you mentioned, once he got back from that injury, he really was back to himself, doing the same game that we had with Sandy Alcantara. You know, his O swing was down one from 2021, but the in zone contact rate was actually better by 1%. K minus walk rate was actually slightly better. Swinging strike rate was slightly better. K rate was slightly better. Home run total was higher, despite, you know, having a down year, although not anything out of whack at 1.06, but career it's at 0.97. So you might expect it to be a little bit, you know, lower than that. The strand rate was right around the same place. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, he was better in 2022 than he was in 2021, but he still had that same 3.05 ERA. He really likes the 3.05 ERA. He had that in 2020 as well. So I think he's more of low threes guy. He doesn't walk a lot of folks. So I think that whip is going to be really nice. He had a really high BABIP early last year, but once he came back, that kind of settled back into its usual routine there. So I think Woodruff is perfectly fine. I think he's great. He's great. He's lovable.
He's very lovable. He's a big cuddle bear. So I'm a fan of Woody. Another guy I'm a fan of, like, these are my two dudes right here. Aaron Nola, another guy that perennially, it just seems like there's a lot of love for him, but then you look at ADP and stuff and not as much love as I'd expect. He's still the eighth starting pitcher off the board, ADP of about 37. So it's not bad by any means, but all the dude does is bring in low ratios outside of one bad year in 2021. And they're always like the XFIPs and stuff, or all the indicators are always even better because we've watched these starts and we see the mess that is the Phillies defense every year. But 205 innings last year, that's three out of the last 4 years over 200. He's had over 180 in four straight seasons. You know, the K to walk has basically been 25% for three straight years. Just an elite pitcher that has a hiccup here and there that people like just imprint into their brain, it feels like, and forget just how good he is. I have him over Woody actually in my rankings. They're right next to each other near the top for me. But I love Aaron Nola. I love Woodruff. If somehow I could leave a draft with those two guys and get hitting early, I would not complain. I know Toby would want one of his elite guys first. Don't argue that. But I would have zero problem leaving drafts with Woodruff and Nola and being like, I have a phenomenal floor with my starting pitching. So I love these two. Yeah. Lost you. You're out.
I'm out.
Now you're back. You're back now. There's something just clicking there in your wiring, I think.
Jeez. Yeah. So Nola.
It's Toby's starting pitching show. You guys know how excited he gets.
Yeah. Nola, I think, is a little bit different. I think Nola is an elite guy. And I think the difference between Nola and a lot of the guys we've talked about is that Nola does throw, you know, the 200 innings. Three of the last 4 years in a full season, you know, he's hit that 200 strikeout mark or 200 innings pitched. He's also hit 220 or more strikeouts. I think you could argue in a lot of instances that, you know, the ERA is even a little high, whether it's, you know, for every year, it's kind of like one thing or another, low strand rate, high home runs per nine, you know, like, I mean, 2021, the ERA was not good, but that was a bizarre year. And all the underlying numbers are just incredible. Last 3 years, 25.3% K minus walk, 24.6 K minus walk, 25.5 K minus walk. We know he does it a little bit different than a lot of other starting pitchers because he gets a lot of called strikes, but you know, the O swing lowest in the last 3 years was at 34.1, 37 last year. He keeps the walk rates incredibly low. He's on a really good team that is going to win a lot of games and put up a lot of offense. So I also like that aspect of it. He differs a little bit with Woodruff there as well. So for me, I really like Nola. I think he checks all the boxes. I don't really have any doubts about the talent level. I think he's really good.
Yep. This is where it starts to get a little more interesting for me, like where there's some guys I can start to kind of cross off a bit. Some I'm still very high on, and some of it's just nitpicking because I think they're still great pitchers. And this one's Dylan Cease, the ninth starting pitcher off the board, ADP of 38. So there's a grouping here towards the back of round two, early round threes, as you can see, of a lot of these starting pitchers. But Dylan Cease, oh man, 184 innings, best of his career. He's went from 165 to 184. The projection, like the growth you want to see, going to be 27 this year. Great. 2.2 ERA, 3.5 xFIP. I think he's more the 3.5 guy, honestly, than the 2.2 guy, because he will walk guys. Like he last year, his walk rate was still 10.4%. His K to walk was 19.9. That's just like, it's good. It's not elite by any means. He leaves, like his home runs dropped, which is awesome. But just the fact he still walks those guys holds me back a bit, just because all it takes is a couple walks and a homer and all it just gets ugly quick. And we've seen in the past, not last year, but those big walk games from Cease. Maybe it changes. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But again, at this point in the draft, I got to find every little thing I can for me to differentiate guys. And for me, Dylan Cease, great pitcher. I need him to go later for me to draft him. So what's your thoughts on Cease?
Yeah, I'm really struggling with Cease as well. I had him everywhere last year. He was kind of the guy that I wanted, and that worked out super well. You know, I was very excited about all of that. But when I look at like all the different ways that the year could go sideways for him, you know, comparatively, I'm not as sold. I know there's a lot of smart people who like him a lot. I remember after our first podcast, when I was throwing cold water on him, I got some tweets thanking me for dropping his draft price a little bit. I think the question is what does he regress to? You know, last year was a pretty unique year. What did he do? How many straight games was it where he had zero?
Oh, yeah.
Where like he had one or fewer.
I felt like it was like 15, 16 games at least. I'm just off the top of my head. It was a lot of games.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 games. Yeah. Where he, 14 games in a row with either one or zero earned runs for him, which I think is quite an accomplishment, especially when you consider the fact that here's a guy who had, like you mentioned, a higher than, well higher than league average by over almost 3% for a starter at 10.4%. You know, he had a very low BABIP at 260, which you could say, okay, he's more of a fly ball pitcher. So that's the reason. I don't know. Career low 8.4% home run per fly ball rate. That despite not having an infield fly ball rate, that was one of his higher levels. You know, the skills are still super good. I mean, swinging strike rate at 15%, O swing at 35.5%, but just throwing it in the zone was something that he really struggled with a lot. He had a career low BABIP at 260, had a career high strand rate at 82.3%. And so again, like, it doesn't mean he's going to be bad, but I just think that there's the real possibility that, you know, what you got to think about is, yeah, he could regress to his true talent level, or similar like last year where he was playing above his head or above his metrics, you know, he plays worse than that. And so what exactly does that look like? And I'm just not sure with the other pitchers that are going in this area. I just have a really hard time going with Cease here over some of the other guys. I just think that there's a lot more. Yeah, I just have such a hard time seeing it, Bubba. I really want to see it.
I'm with you. 100%.
He was so helpful for me last year, but yeah.
But look at where his draft price was last year. I know it's a cop out, but it's like where we're at now. Like, there weren't the same talented pitchers that are around him now than last year, if that makes sense. And so it's kind of one of those things. And I'm 100% like, everything you said is kind of in my brain. I'm sitting there going, he's so good in this regard. But then there's this that really scares you. And there's other pitchers around him that are so much like consistently, at least that you can see as being potentially better. And at the same time, if Cease just somehow lowers the walk rate, like, he could take that next step type thing. It's frustrating. I'm 100% with you on this one. And it's one of those that, you know, there's always a bunch of draft picks we get right and wrong. This is one I could easily see me getting wrong so easily. I could also see me getting it really right. it's because there's I think we talk about a lot of these elite pitchers where the floors are so great, and that's why I like them and you like some of them, where Cease has just such a wide array of like finishing points compared to some of these early guys.
So check this out. Over his last 15 games, Dylan Cease had a 217 BABIP against, and he had an 89.1% strand rate.
It's just so difficult to like
sustain. I mean, it would be interesting if you were to say, like, okay, he gets a 75% strand rate in those games. Like, what's his ERA at the end of the season?
It's a great
point. Everything else was headed in the wrong direction. Z contact was up to 82.7%. Mm-hmm. Swinging strike rate down to 13.8%. You know, so it's just like, I see the wrong movement in the second half of the season for him. And I can't see it. I can't see picking him here over some of the guys that we have left on the table.
Yeah, let's talk about one of those guys we got left on the table right here, Mr. Carlos Rodon, the new New York Yankee. And, you know, he's got an ADP of 42 picks after Dylan Cease. Back-to-back seasons with a sub-3 ERA and the peripheral, like the XFIPs and everything, they pretty much support outstanding stuff is what it is. Innings-wise, jumped up to 178 this past year with the Giants, which is outstanding. 14 Ws, even on a bad baseball team, is outstanding. But that K-to-walk back-to-back seasons, Toby, of 26.1, 27.9, strikeout rates of about 34%. Whips, 1.03.96. Like, your roto stats are great. Toby will have the much deeper, knowledgeable stats here that we could all talk about. But one thing that stands out a ton with Rodon, and I've always said I'm willing to be wrong on guys, I was wrong on him last year. Because when the White Sox didn't offer him a qualifying offer, I thought he was broken still. Nope, he was fine. Giants got it done. And he goes to Yankee Stadium where left-handed pitchers can do well because the righties don't get the short porch. I guess it's a great thing. And he limits the home runs to begin with. So the more and more I look into Carlos Rodon, the more and more I'm buying into them, which makes me feel like I'm in trouble because I didn't buy him last year. So what else is going to happen? He's going to have a horrible season if I buy into him now. So that's just like the law of how this works. But I like him a lot, and I would take him over Dylan Cease. That's the kind of the problem we have right here. So what about you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's also another, like, I would take him over Dylan Cease too. I mean, I see no way that Dylan Cease, you know, outside of the injury concerns, which are incredibly valid, you know, yep. I'm not saying taking anything away from that. If that's the reason you go in a different direction, I think that's totally fine. But here's a guy, like, we know why he's better. I mean, his velocity is up. Let's see. It was up 2.5 miles per hour from 20 to 21. And he stayed there from 21 to 22. So he's at 95.6 from the left side. He's on the Yankees. He's going to be on a really good team. They're going to score a lot of runs. It is a little bit of a home run park, like you mentioned, but I don't think it impacts him as much. And it's also runs wise, it plays as more of a pitcher's park than a hitter's park. So I think that, you know, or at least middle of the road. right? And so I think that's really nice. It's not going to be, you know, where Rodon was pitching before, but again, he's going to have a better offense. And I think he's really good, and the projections agree. I mean, the projections absolutely love Rodon. You know, I think the major question is just the health piece. You know, he's one of the top pitchers. I think he's pitcher SP3 based on the projections. Every projection system loves him, but again, it's the question mark over the innings, and you know, and for sure, like that's a major issue. And the projections have him at 181, 181, 182, 171. So they're right about last year, and that was the most innings that he's ever thrown. So it could be optimistic, but you know, there's always guys. You know, it's like Zach Wheeler, right? Zach Wheeler was an injury prone pitcher who couldn't throw innings either until he wasn't. You know, and it's not like it's something that happens, like it doesn't just happen overnight, but it's like our perceptions maybe are a little bit slower to change. And so another good thing to look at for Rodon would be, okay, like if he were, how many innings would he have to throw to connect at that projection? If he's at 140 instead of 178 or 180, like the projections have him, is he still worth the pick? And then if that's the case, is that a number that you're willing to bet at? And then recognizing that there's upside, you know, as well there. So, yeah. So again, all to say, I think Rodon's really interesting here, comes with the risk, but the talent level, I think there's no doubt, you know, as long as he comes in and he's throwing that velocity, I think he's an outstanding pitcher.
Yeah. I'm with you. I've done a 180 on him completely. And I don't see that changing, and it's going to be fun for me to see where I push him to if I really want him, because I do believe in the overall talent there. Like you said, if he can get above like 180 or something, like that could be insane what he could bring to the table there. All right, the 11th starting pitcher off the board, one Shane O'Mac, Shane McClanahan, ADP of 43. I'm going to keep this short and sweet, and I know a lot of people hate me for this. I am not drafting Shane McClanahan this year. I have him ranked like 20-something. So I won't be able to. People will draft him ahead of me. I am terrified of that shoulder arm situation. I could be way overthinking it, but things were definitely not the same late in the season. And if anything, I'd have to see a lot more in spring training. Like you said, with Strider, I cannot draft Shane McClanahan right now. And again, I could be 100% wrong here, but I think more people than not agree with me, because if people believed he was the great pitcher he was last year, he wouldn't be getting drafted right here either. So I am out on Shane. I'm just going to keep it simple. People might hate me, but so be it. What's your thoughts on Shane McClanahan?
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it short and sweet too. I think for the same reasons, I'm not really interested. I'm not sure if I could see anything in spring training either that would convince me necessarily. I mean, maybe if the velo is back to where it was previously.
It would take a lot for me, a lot.
But yeah, it's just it just doesn't seem worth it right here. I will say that the projections, although again, like, and this is one of the questions that a listener has later on, is like with the projections, you just look at the projections and like choose the guy that's the highest. And I think one of the things you got to just look at is the inputs, right? And so the projections have like 168, 172, 184, 184. You know, so you got to think, is that where I think McClanahan's going to be, or Shanahan, whatever? Thinking football still. Is that where he's going to be? Is that where you think he's going to be, or is he going to be lower than that? You know, and those are the types of questions that you have to ask yourself. I will also say that I don't trust the projections as much with pitchers, largely because I think there are things that we can see as analysts that happen earlier than the projections are able to pick up. So that's one thing that I would say. You know, the projections do like him, but I think the innings pitched are a little high, and I think there's just too many risks for me to feel good about grabbing him here. And I think also one of the reasons for that is because the next two guys as well that are coming
100% on that. And one of the next guys here is Max Scherzer, the 12th starting pitcher off the board, ADP of about 46. And yes, Max has battled back problems, 145 innings last year. Prior to that, though, 179, 172, bunch of 200 pluses. It's been an issue, there's no doubt, but even in the 145, 229 ERA, 323 xFIP, perennially puts up almost 25 plus, if not better. K to walk, which is what we're looking for, limits the damage, keeps the ball in the ballpark last year way better than he has in basically his whole career since 2014, which was great to see. The ratios are always like, the ERA and the WHIP are always some of the best in baseball. gets you a ton of strikeouts. It's just a matter of, will the bat hold up? And last year, it still got you decent amount of innings. You wanted more, but now you're not paying that elite price. You're paying a good price, but not an elite price. And if for some amazing reason, he sneaks back into 160 to 170, Yahtzee. So I'm intrigued with Scherzer. I'll say that much. I'm very intrigued with Max Scherzer. What about you?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, you mentioned the ratios. Here are his ERA numbers since 2015. 279, 296, 251, 253, 292, 374, 246, 229. And by the way, the 374 was in 67 innings in the shortened season, and came along with a 355 BABIP and a 1.34 home runs per nine, which is higher than both numbers at any point in his career. So really just a small sample fluke for Scherzer there. I mean, when he pitches, he's still absolutely incredible. Last year, 14.8% swinging strike, 37.8% O swing. The in zone contact was really nice, although elevated from where it is at his career, still 81.8%, you know, 26.4% K minus walk rate. All the numbers are incredibly good. He's playing on a really good team and a really good ballpark for pitchers. So again, I think it's a question mark of how many innings does he pitch? You know, last year, 145, year before that, 179, you know, 2019, 172, but then you look at the projections, they have him at 191, 191, 167, and 181. And so, you know, again, I think those are a little high. So again, it's at what innings pitch level does he break even? And are you willing to take a gamble on that while also thinking about, you know, what the possibility on the upside is if he does manage to stay healthy? You know, I will say that both the ERA at 3.38, 3.14, 3.32, 3.32, you know, again, baking in some risk because of injuries and other things, but, you know, it's been a long time since he's been there. And if the ball stays at what it is, it's hard to see him as an extreme fly ball pitcher really getting hurt there. So yeah, I think Scherzer is a really interesting gamble there too. But again, like, you know, and, you know, we're talking about all these guys, right? McClanahan, Scherzer, Rodon. One of those guys is not going to make it. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like, and those are the,
it's gonna be a crash and burn.
Those are what we're focusing. You're like what we're thinking about. So,
yeah. Well, that's why it's fun. I've done a fun exercise for Fantasy Pros. I wrote five articles recapping each of the first five rounds in a 12 team league of the final ADPs last year. So like 1 through 12, like I like just looking at how each pick finished basically. And it's, I'd have to go back and look again, but just like top of my head, it felt like it was like 50-50 that the pitchers were worth the squeeze, basically. It was an interesting like roller coaster ride of how things played out in rounds. So like you're saying, it basically to support what you're saying is at least one of them ain't going to make it. So, and that's the beauty and the beast, I guess, of fantasy baseball is you can do all the research you want, but if a guy gets hurt, which is out of your control, is what it is, I guess. Just how the cookie crumbles. The 13th starting pitcher off the board, another guy that, you know, could be in the same boat here. ADP of 47.5, just won the AL Cy Young. No big deal. 175 innings, a sub-2 ERA, which is ridiculous. The ratios, as usual, for Mr. Justin Verna, it's his fourth straight season with a sub-1 whip, which is insane. Strikeouts have always been there. They were down a bit this past year, actually. I think the velocity was down a bit as well. Home runs were down. Like, he pitched really, really well, especially for 175 innings, usually much more. But coming off TJ, pretty impressive at the same time. Now he goes to New York to pitch with Max Scherzer. I love Verlander again. I'll buy right back in. As long as this workhorse is pitching, I'm in, especially at an ADP like this.
Yeah, he's really interesting. I mean, he's like smoke and mirrors. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the O swing's fantastic, but in zone contact rate, you know, 85%, so worse than league average. His swinging strike rate's at 11.6, pretty middling, you know, but he still manages to strike out 27.8% of guys, 23.4% K minus walk rate. Let me just check that CSW. Yeah, the CSW is low at 26.5%. Like, there's nothing. Like, I struggle with Verlander because I just have trouble seeing how it's sustainable. That being said, like, he's going to be in New York, a cavernous ballpark, one of the better pitcher ballparks, you know, so his fly ball tendencies will play really well there. They'll play well with the ball so long as it stays, you know, the ball that he has. He has super low whips because he never walks guys anymore. I mean, like 1.56, 1.70, 1.5, 1.49, you know, for walks per nine the last little bit. So he's pitching without guys on base so often, you know. The BABIP is super low, but it's super low consistently because of those fly balls. And normally I think it's the infield. Yeah. The infield fly ball rates are really high, like 19.7% this year. You know, so I think a lot went his way last year, which is why he had the 1.75 ERA, but there's still a lot of room there for him to have a very successful season, throwing less, you know, or getting less luck in that department. So, you know, I can definitely see it with Verlander. Yeah, but I have a little bit more of a struggle because, as I mentioned before, like I like to be able to see it. I like to be able to know why a guy has been really successful. And I think it's a little tricky to figure that out for Verlander with some of the numbers last year. But he's done it so consistently. It's like at some point you got to start believing.
Yeah, that's kind of how I got lucky last year. I was like, yeah, there was concerns, but I figured if he's getting signed to pitch, no one's going to tell him he can't pitch like a certain amount of innings. If he's healthy, he's pitching. I got lucky. I'm not going to say it works every time by any means, but just kind of a feel thing there. I'll keep riding that wave as long as he's on the mound. It'll backfire eventually. It will. But at an ADP like this, I'll take my chances with Mr. Verlander. The 14th starting pitcher off the board, one Zach Wheeler, coming in with an ADP of 55. Now it's getting fun. We're talking back into round four here. Got a late start to the year because of some injuries, but still 153 very, very good innings. 2.82 ERA, third straight season with a sub-3 ERA. The whip was just fine again for the back-to-back seasons. Strikeout rate was good with the K to walks. You know, there were some reports that the velo was down towards the end of last year, but then postseason, he's back up to pumping 97 after like taking one start off. And part of the reason he got a late start to the year was kind of a shoulder fatigue, like weird shoulder thing that I didn't pick him. I was worried about him, and he pitched just fine. I like him at this ADP. The fact he pitched well in the postseason with that velo got my attention. Maybe there's still some concerns that you might have here, but I'm in on Zach Wheeler at this ADP.
Yeah, I think Wheeler, you know, is a guy that I'm really interested in as well, so long as what we see in spring training, like with the velocity, I think that would be a real good gauge for me about whether I'm going to be in or not. Because like you mentioned, you know, the results are just really, they're really good. Like the ERA is really low. The whip has been really low because he doesn't walk guys. He doesn't give up home runs really, right? Like 0.38, 0.68, 0.76 the last little bit. You know, he only has 1 year with more than one home run per nine. And that was back in 2019. It was 1.01, you know, and that was like the height of the juiced ball. So you're looking at a guy with higher than 20% K minus walk rates, you know, really good O swing. Helps with the walks. The end zone contact is fine, like right around the average, but he's never really been a dominant K guy. So it's much more about, you know, theoretically the volume that he can provide, those ratios, and, you know, the strikeouts will come and they'll be there. And again, he's on a really good team. Again, that should give him a lot of offensive support. And while it may seem like kind of ridiculous to keep mentioning that, like, I do think it's really important. Like, wins are part of the game, and it's much better to be on a good team. It's hard to find guys that aren't on good teams that put up really nice win totals. You know, I think Garrett Cole is number one in wins over the last 3 years or something like that. And he's only averaging 14 a year. And those wins, my God, they make a huge difference. Like, you look at the SGP this year, like I was doing the main event, you know, like a standing gains point for win is 1.9. So like two wins, you know, moves you up. And that's, you know, it's just, yeah,
he's a beast.
It's significant. Yeah.
Last one on the list here for this week, the 15th starting pitcher off the board is one Shane Bieber, ADP of 55.3, just behind Zach Wheeler, going about the same. What the Biebs did was impressive to me. After 96 innings in 2021, when he battled injuries, 200 innings pitched, 31 starts, most starts since 2019, most innings since 2019, where he threw 214 and had Cy Young stuff. 2.88 ERA with a 2.98 xFIP, outstanding. Now the strikeouts were down quite a bit from years past, like big time. Still, the K to walk was great because he didn't walk anybody. His walks were down a ton as well, which was great to see. Love to see the strikeouts come up a bit, but, you know, ratios have always been pretty solid with him. He got the innings. It was a healthy jump, which is not always the most comforting thing in the world, but you know, he is going to be 28 this year. He has that workhorse stuff, I guess, if that makes sense. And at this ADP, I am very, very intrigued to Shane Bieber, where in years past, I was never really in on him earlier in drafts. At this point, I am quite curious if he can even get you 180 innings. That could be, because I think the strikeouts come back a bit. Could be wrong. He relied on a lot of called strikes in the past, which I don't know if he got them this last year. I didn't look at that. I guess I could. I had the page up, but I'm pretty sure you'll get to that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm a fan of Biebs this year, mainly for the price. But it was a very healthy jump in innings pitch, which does concern me a bit. So what are your thoughts on Bieber?
Yeah, I like Bieber as well. I think that, yeah, the strikeouts are a little bit of the question mark for me. Still, like the last year, you know, the in zone contact rate, I'm just looking over his last 10, you know, 88%. The key is the O swing is really high, him attacking the zone. He got that walk rate down to 2.7%. So in some respects, like it looks a little bit like Nola with less of the strikeout stuff, you know, where he's got that elite control back, you know, 13.6% swinging strike rate, which is no joke. You know, the velo has continued to trend down, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. Let me just check really quick. Yeah, the velo is down, although it increased towards the end of last year. Over his last 10 games, it was right around 92. But you'll remember he was like the elite dominant Shane Bieber when he was closer to 94. So, you know, the velocity means a lot for Bieber. But that being said, as you mentioned, like where he's going, the volume that he provides, the upside we know he potentially has if that velo can come back a little bit. But I think overall, like anytime he has pitched, he has been, you know, a successful pitcher. And so, you know, I think he can be really good. And so I think it's just, it'll be interesting to monitor what his velo is at during spring training.
100% on that. So yeah, it's what's fun about this top 15. There's a lot of guys in the past we've seen as top, you know, five even pitchers, if not top 10 guys. A lot of moving pieces here where you can see a lot of differing results. I'm gonna make an executive decision. We'll do the late round targets next week on part two. We'll do that. We got a handful of listener questions, so let's do those real quick because we're getting late into the evening here and bang these out real quick. So we will get to those next week for you lovely listeners. But we'll start with our buddy Ben Tidd. He has a spreadsheet question for Toby. As you said, Toby, it's all about your spreadsheet. They love it. Do you ever move players manually after you enter your projections and weights, or do you just draft straight off the calculated SGP numbers dollar values? There must be some times where they say someone is a value, but you still disagree, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely. Especially with pitchers. You know, essentially what I'm doing like process-wise this year, which is a little bit different. So I never manually change anything. I never manually change anything. Like I know all the players. I know how I generally feel about them. I know how the projections feel about them. With hitters, I feel pretty good about the projection. There are some where I'm like, I like this guy. There was this change or there was that change, or I don't know where I'm getting this projection from. Is it a plate appearance thing? I'll kind of check in and look at the inputs and see whether I disagree or not. But essentially like the way I'm doing it this year is going through. And if I agree generally with it, then, you know, I'm sticking with the projection. And then if it's a guy where I kind of like them and the projections don't, or the projections really like them and I don't really, then I'm doing more investigation where I'm like, let me figure out like who might be right, who might be wrong in this instance. And if there's a situation where the projection aligns with my feelings, you know, that a guy's not that good, then I'm not going to draft that guy probably, unless of course, you know, something ridiculous happens. So that's kind of how I am approaching it, this year, but I never manually change anything. Like my job is not to change the projections. My job is to use the projections as one of a few inputs, but by far the heaviest, to figure out kind of where I want to go and then use my own brain to kind of figure out, but I don't want to change them. Like I know like this guy's going here. I just added a new column to mine. That's like the round that players are going in. Cause I have a really difficult time translating. Like people are like, oh, that's a round nine guy. And in my head, I'm like 15 times nine equals, you know, and it just takes too long. So I have the round there and I'm just kind of highlighting the guys that I like in green, the guys that I'm going to investigate a little bit more in yellow, and the guys that aren't, you know, mentioned there are probably guys that I won't be getting. And so that just helps me in thinking through like where there are groups of players that I like and decision points to be made and, you know, things like that. So that's kind of how I use projections. I use them a lot less with.
And Toby is gone. He lost his camera, not just his mic this time. That's impressive. He's in, he's out. We've lost Toby again. Technology, fun stuff, folks. So yes, it was another great projection conversation from Toby G, just like he had at the end of last week's episode, which is really, really cool. So we've lost Toby. Hopefully he'll be back shortly to get back with us here, but a couple other listener questions for you real quick as we keep moving along here. Brent Chaser from Baseball HQ asked, which starting pitchers do you like between ADP 200 and 300? Brent, I will save your question for next week because we were going to discuss actual targets at 200 or 300 tonight. We're going to move that to next week's pod, so your question will be answered, I promise you, on the next episode. So keep that in mind. Toby's back, but he's still not having cameras. Can you hear me, Bubba? I can hear you, so you're good there.
Let's just go. Let's just go.
Okay, cool. We'll roll with it. I went to the next question. Brant Chesser asked which starting pitcher between 200 and 300 ADP. I told him we'll get that next week. It's on next week's agenda. So he's good there. Got a handful for you here. Steve Brunn. Thoughts on Pedro Severino over under 150 innings pitched. And this is one, Severino's a pitcher we'll talk about next week. And he's a guy that I've had a heck of a time trying to figure out because when it comes to Luis Severino, we know the talent's really, really good. We saw 191, 193 innings in 17 and 18, tons of injuries in 19 and 21, 102 innings last year. I lean, he gets real close to 150. It's hard for me to say one way or the other. How do you view Severino?
Yeah, I think we looked at Severino like a number of episodes back.
You're probably right.
I think I see him more as like a mid threes guy. You know, the BABIP was way low. The strand rate was way high last year. You know, I think, you know, the O swing was, you know, there's nothing that really jumps out in his profile, honestly, like about him being particularly good. Like it's all very solid. And that was even with a velo bump last year up to 96.3. The projections, my spreadsheet does not like him. That could change. You know, I think I'd want to monitor him in spring training, but I think that just with like the innings being kind of middling and there not being any like super good stuff, I'm a little hesitant to jump in on that. So it's questionable, but he's close enough. Yeah,
that's the conundrum with Severino. I don't mind it though. I think he's pretty darn close, especially at the ADP, and we will talk deeper about him next week. Liam at Freed Minds asks, do you guys buy into the Strider hype? Cheers. I think we both agree he's awesome. It's just a matter of how healthy is he.
Yeah.
That's pretty.
I agree. Yeah, totally.
So we'll see where that one goes for sure.
Bubba, can I just say one thing to Ben Tidd's question sorry. that I was gonna say there? No, I just remembered it when I was thinking about Severino. Is like, so the dollar value separation between like a pitcher at that's ranked 156th overall, not as a pitcher, but like ranked 156th overall, and then a guy who's at like, you know, close to 200 of ADP is like $2, you know? And so you're talking about pretty small, you know, differences that can make up a $2 value difference between guys. So I think when guys are that close, you want to be thinking also about like how you're constructing your roster. So maybe there's a guy that's, you know, you feel better about ratios early on, but your Ks are a little low. You went with Woodruff and, you know, Bieber as your top two. Well, then you may want to go after the guy whose K's with the ERA and WHIP a little bit more of a question mark, you know? So I think, you know, you never want to just go by what the spreadsheet puts out because it can't factor in that, or it could if you're really smart, but I'm not that smart. So sorry to digress
You're very smart. I wouldn't go that far. My buddy Dirework, Man Bear Hawk on Twitter asks, who will win me a fantasy baseball league and why is it Justin Steele? I'm going to say he's a Cubs fan, just for anybody that knows. I love Justin Steele. I was in a Discord today that there was a lot of negativities toward Justin Steele because he's a two-pitch pitcher, which I'm sorry, I think we love Spencer Strider. I'm not comparing the two. Just going to say that real quick, but I don't. The two pitch thing, I think, is starting to get a little people pick and choose where they want the two pitches now, which doesn't seem like a system that works for me. But I'll say with Steele, the biggest thing for Justin Steele that I like is the improvements we saw as the season went on. I know there were some velo issues towards the end of the season. That's why he got shut down. But ADP at 271 for a guy that we saw throw 119 innings, most he's thrown in a long, like in his career. If you look at even that was all in the bigs too, no minor leagues last year. I think there's a lot to like with Justin Steele. So at that ADP, with the upside, maybe he makes it to 140 to 150 innings. I'm a big fan. I don't know about you, Toby, but it's a dude I like a lot.
Yeah, I like him as well.
Good. It makes me feel better because, yeah, I was getting buried in a chat today, so I'm just going to throw that out there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I would just say, like, Justin Steele, if you look at his last 10 games, 10-game sample, you know, the Z contact isn't great, but 86.6 on the way down. His O swing was at 31.1, the swinging strike rate at 11.5%. And then I think most importantly, if you look at his K minus walk, like it's nothing outrageous, but 28.8% strikeout rate and a 9.3% walk rate. So a little bit elevated there, but that gives you about a 19% K minus walk rate, which will definitely play. And then if you look at even broader at his like last five games, you know, 83.6 Z contact, 35.5% strikeout rate, 7.3% walk rate, swinging strike rate at 14.6, and his O swing right around 35% as well. And let's see if that corresponded with corresponded with a little bit of a velo bump, but then more importantly, let's see, his drop that is, there's no major pitch mix there change there. 36.6, was that 92? So he threw something 8% of the time. Anyways, yeah, I mean, I think you can see where it goes wrong, like with the walk and all that jazz, but I think he showed enough where he's going that there's a lot of potential there, and that's why a lot of people are like him.
Yep, 100% agree with you on that. And last question we have here is from our buddy SMMS79. In an OC, how could you not start 1.1 Acuna or J-Ram, Cole, whoever you want for 3.1? So basically going Acuna, J-Ram, one. He's saying Cole with your second pick, whoever you want for 3.1, and not believe you can win a league. Just his question. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of factors, but I get what he's saying.
There's 27 more picks to go.
I guess what he's saying.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. I guess that's an amazing start.
Yeah, it's an amazing start.
Put that way.
Yeah. You know, when we, us Liverpool fans this year, we're just kind of, you know, we're looking for a solid foundation like that. That's all we're hoping for.
Yeah, it's not too bad. If you can somehow get Cole at pick 24, you are on the right track. Let's put it that way. All right, Toby, it's going to wrap us up for our starting pitching preview part one. We got 15 pitchers in. We'll do 15 more next week, get some deeper targets, listener questions, and more. Any final thoughts? I thought that was good. There's a lot of – I knew this would take longer because, like I said at the beginning, this pool of pitching this year, it's very, very talented. And there's definitely angles where you can say, okay, this guy should go higher. But there's also angles like where certain guys are like, nah, I don't know. There's questions there. There's a lot of really interesting pitchers where it's not as separated – like easily separated as it has been in years past. So I knew it would take longer. Any final thoughts on these top 15?
No, you should probably draft pocket aces.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about it because of the murkiness of the very good pitchers, but there's still murkiness. Like you said, there's a handful won't make it to the end of the season. And no, pocket aces might not either. That's always a given. But yeah, same thoughts as you said before. All right, we'll wrap it up there. Make sure you guys follow Toby on the Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm at BDIntric. We'll be back with you guys next week with part two. But this was your starting pitching preview, part one for the 2023 fantasy baseball season. Catch you all later.